What's the most interesting object in the sky? In an era when exoplanets are being discovered all the time and we're sending telescopes into deep space, a lot of us have forgotten about the bodies that are closer to home, like our humble moon. Since humans landed on the moon back in 1969, scientific interest in it hasn't exactly been cutting edge. But with new moon missions in the works and commercial interest growing, it may be time to take a fresh look at our lone natural satellite. Rebecca Boyle takes that look in the new book, Our Moon: How Earth's Celestial Companion Transformed the Planet, Guided Evolution, and Made Us Who We Are. Rebecca is a contributing editor at Scientific American, a contributing writer for Quanta magazine and The Atlantic, and a frequent contributor at The New York Times, Popular Science, Smithsonian Air and Space, and many other publications. Here she is to share five of her key insights.
I'm Rebecca Boyle, and I'm a science journalist and author of a new book called Our Moon: How Earth's Celestial Companion Transformed the Planet, Guided Evolution, and Made Us Who We Are. Our moon is a new human history, the story of how we became ourselves and how it all happened because of the moon. I'm happy to share five key insights from my book. I hope these help you think about the moon in a new way. Number one, Earth owes the stability of our climate to the moon. Our planet is tilted about 23.5 degrees on its axis, which is why we have the seasons. And this stays pretty much the same over time, with maybe a couple degrees of shift over tens of thousands of years. But other planets don't have this stability. Take Mars, for example. Mars right now is tilted about 25 degrees, although it's a lot like Earth, with the similar axial tilt, a day that's a few minutes longer than ours, called a sol. Mars does not have a moon to speak of. It has two little dinky satellites called Phobos and Deimos, but they play no major role in Mars' story. And the lack of a moon might be one reason why Mars has such an intense and wild climate. In the past 10 to 20 million years, Mars has wobbled like a top, swinging wildly between 13 and 40 degrees on its axis. When it's tilted at 40 degrees, its carbon dioxide polar ice caps point closer to the sun, and these can totally melt or sublime, which means to turn from ice into vapor. This injects gargantuan amounts of carbon dioxide into the Martian atmosphere, which causes extreme climate shifts. But in the past 10 million years, Earth's axial tilt has shifted only by about 2 degrees. The moon is the reason why. Insight number two. The moon probably enabled the evolution of terrestrial life. Backbone animals left the water once. They went back numerous times, evolving into whales and other creatures. But when fish left the water during the Devonian period, life on Earth changed forever. This happened because the moon dragged animals ashore through its tide and stranded them. In order to survive, they would have had to breathe the air and move themselves across the sand to safety and to find food. Over eons and evolutionary time, the fish that evolved random mutations that could enable them to do this are the ones who survived. These fish, stranded by the moon's tidal pull, are the founding mothers of our lineage, the tetrapods. Insight number three. The moon gave us both religion and science. Religious worship and devotional practices dedicated to the moon gave us the foundations of science. I think these enterprises are a lot more alike than people think, quite alike in their goals, if not their methods. Both give us tools that can help with the profound difficulty of understanding our existence. We struggle with the finality of death and with eternity, because it's hard for us to imagine being outlived, whether it's by our own children or the entire Earth. I think the moon was the best way for early cultures to conceptualize these things, especially the ideas of becoming and birth, declining and death, and returning, and the everlasting. Science flowed from the original quests for understanding these things. Early civilizations had religious or superstitious reasons for learning lunar rhythms, but the end result was empirical knowledge. One of my heroes, Carl Sagan, once wrote that science is, at least in part, informed worship. I think what he meant was that the scientific enterprise and the religious enterprise are both about being humbled by creation and seeking to understand our place in it. The difference is that religion is based on belief, and the heart of modern science is the exact opposite. Not religious unbelief, but disbelief. A hypothesis must be something you can both test and disprove. If your idea is conceivably false, you must be able to demonstrate that it's false. This is the concept of falsifiability. So paraphrasing the historian of philosophy, Bertrand Russell, religion desires people to accept ideas and willingly believe them. Science desires people to reject ideas and then mess around and find out. I think both of these, though, are still fundamentally about discovering who we are and how we got here. The moon was a guiding light for both of these processes. Insight number 4. The moon is a part of us all. The moon formed from a titanic collision between a Mars-sized world and the early Earth more than 4 billion years ago. Earth was still brand new when this happened. Then it was destroyed and remade by this event. The Earth and the moon share the same material because they're born at the same time. This is incredibly unusual. We're the only planet with a moon like this in the entire solar system. Other mooned planets have just little crumbs orbiting them. Jupiter has 80 moons, maybe 81 by now. We're always finding new little ones. But they're all these tiny little remnants, and they don't really have much influence on the planet. Our moon is 1/4 the size of our planet. It's huge compared to Earth. It's also really far away. I think this is something that's hard to conceptualize because distances are difficult for us to imagine when they become astronomical. The moon is 250,000 miles away. That's so far from Earth that you could fit almost all the other planets between here and there. Or depending on where it is in its orbit, which changes throughout the month, you could fit about 30 Earths between Earth and the moon. And I think people might not really grasp that when we look up at it at night and it seems so big, it seems so close. It's not. It's really far away. We don't know if other exomoons exist. We know there are lots of exoplanets, but so far we have not found any that host moons like ours. But a lot of people are looking for these. When we find them, I think those systems will be good places to look for signs of life. Insight number 5. The people who control the calendar control society. The moon was the first thing that we used to give people this power. In ancient cultures, managing the way we mark time would have given leaders control over things like sowing and harvesting crops, holding gatherings, celebrations, religious festivals, transacting business, so many things. Some of these effects can be left to the imagination, but for the most part, it's true that people had to follow the calendar, and therefore whoever made it. The moon and its reliable 29.5-day cycle is the easiest and most obvious way to form a calendar. But it's really tricky to align the lunar month with the solar seasonal year. There are about 354 days in 12 lunar cycles and 365 days in one solar year. So we have to figure out how to combine these things. Sometimes people invented traditions or new calendar systems that interposed intercalary months or weeks between these two things. The 12 days of Christmas is a holdover from this tradition. There are lots of different tools people figured out over time. And often they use tools to do it. And the people who controlled those tools or knew how to use them inherently had power over other people's lives. This is a more modern example of how calendars confer power. Election Day. It's on the second Tuesday in November because Congress passed a law in 1845 based on the needs of farmers, because the U.S. was then an agrarian nation. The Electoral College votes in December, but people needed time to collect ballots from these far-flung polling places so they could tabulate results in time. So Congress backdated the Electoral College deadline by a few weeks, which gave us early November. Men, who could only vote at the time, needed a day or so to walk or ride a horse to a polling place, so Congress needed to build in a travel day. Sunday was a rest day for church, so that was out. Monday was a fine day for travel, and that's why we still vote on Tuesday. But studies have shown midweek elections disenfranchise voters, especially low-income voters or people in states that don't allow early voting or that make it harder to get absentee ballots. It would take an act of Congress to move Election Day, or even just to make it a national holiday. Support for this is generally higher among Democrats than Republicans, so I don't think this will change anytime soon. The 7-day week is derived from dividing the lunar cycle by 4. So in an indirect sense, the moon still confers power to those who control the civil calendar and the events on it. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Rebecca. That was Rebecca Boyle with 5 big ideas from Our Moon: How Earth's Celestial Companion Transformed the Planet, Guided Evolution, and Made Us Who We Are. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.